Welcome to MLB Daily, your one-stop shop for daily baseball content. I am LJ LaFura. Alongside me, I've got Brandon Karam, and we are a Belly Up Sports podcast. We are what they aren't. Brandon, how you doing?
LJ, doing good. Just got done watching Braves-Dodgers. Got a chance to watch pretty much all of that game. Was also able to watch a lot of Astros-Red Sox. And two games that I'm very surprised by the final scores heading into today. You don't usually see two games that end up with 8 runs and 7 runs difference in the postseason on the same day.
Aggregate score tonight is 18-3 between the winners and losers.
However, I still enjoyed watching both games. Just the playoff atmosphere makes these games just always feel like it's a lot closer than it is.
Well, yeah, and, you know, we'll get into more detail with this in a little bit, but I think more so with the Red Sox than this even with this Atlanta game, it was the same thing where it was really one inning. And for an unbiased person, I'm sure that one inning was very entertaining. For the losing side, it certainly wasn't. But outside of that, there was so many big moments for both teams that it definitely still kept compelling baseball. But let's go ahead and jump into this Houston-Boston matchup. And this one's Framber Valdez versus Chris Sale. And I'm just going to go ahead and start with a quick singing of the praises of Chris Sale, because this was a good start from him.
Yeah.
I am very pleased with this one. He looked good. With the exception of one spot in the lineup, he looked pretty darn good in this game. Ends up getting the loss in this one, which I'll get to in a minute. 5 1/3, 3 hits, 7 strikeouts with 2 earned. But Brandon, this scoring started in the top of the second, where Alvarez. These names sound too familiar on the Astros. It's amazing they don't have more trouble with branding. But anyway, this one, absolute mammoth homer off of Chris Sale by him. And if I'm correct, Framber Valdez, or no, Jordan Alvarez ends up during Chris Sale's time in this game, 3 for 3 with 3 RBIs. Off of Chris Sale in this game. He hit him. And in my opinion, Chris Sale looked great through 4, looked a little shaky in that 5th, but got himself out of it. This is the first time we've seen him really even be allowed to get himself out of an inning this season that I can remember, certainly one as big as it is. And he flat out got the job done, which is a good thing to see moving forward. But the next inning doesn't go so well. He gets runners on base. And here is where I question Alex Cora, no disrespect meant, but this just wasn't, I don't think it was the right move. His philosophy in this regard isn't the right thing. Brandon, you sent me a TikTok poking fun at Alex Cora the other day. I found it very amusing, I will admit.
I love those kinds of videos, just where it's like the quick compilation. It's just
sarcastic thing. Comments that, like, some of them are overblown, but most of them are just about all of them are to an extent true. And one that really hits home is Alex Cora's almost unwillingness to view walks as a positive part of the game. In terms of particularly, they made a comment about him not wanting to intentionally walk guys. And I think his outlook on guys pitching around a guy is very similar. We've seen him intentionally walk one batter, to my knowledge, in this entire postseason. It was 2 nights ago, and it did not end well. But in this scenario, you've got Jordan Alvarez, who's tearing the cover off the ball against Chris Sale. You've got 2 runners on. This isn't good. Again, You're doing so well with this, Brandon.
That was the first time in a while. Sorry, I was trying to look up something on Baseball Reference, and your face was just very close to the search bar.
Unbelievable.
Well, you were saying he's been doing a good job. Something along those lines. That's where you cut off. Something about just start over with the walks. Start over with the walks.
Oh, yeah. So the walks, doesn't want to intentionally walk, guys. Did not go well. The only time he's done it in the postseason. And you can tell he's not big, certainly not big on pitching around a guy without the actual strategy of like, okay, I want to get this guy. I'm focused on more on getting this guy out. They're more focused on avoiding walks than any team in any situation. Now you have Yordan Alvarez coming up to the plate. 2 for 2, already hit a home run off the guy with runners on base, and this game is very close to almost being able to get out of hand if this inning goes south. So what do? You keep in mind, second base is open. That's not the ideal base. But with how Yordan Alvarez is, don't give him a pitch in the zone. Like, and that's something that's not like from the way the at-bat went, Brandon, were you watching at this point?
I was.
It wasn't like it was a pitch that he missed that was meant to be around near the edge or outside of the zone. Like, as far as I'm concerned, there shouldn't have been maybe one pitch that at bat that was actually truly in the strike zone. Try to get him to fish. Try him to get to swing at stuff that he shouldn't be. And that's the only way you should be trying to get him out here. I'm 100% fine with that walk to load the bases with how he'd been playing. And I thought that as soon as he stepped up to the plate, pitch around him to the maximum degree. They didn't. And that comes from the manager.
And so, this is the same inning where I believe, so it was Altuve walked to start the inning, and then Michael Brantley got on because Kyle Schwarber made an error at first base, right?
Yes.
Is that what it was? I didn't see the error.
I don't remember the error, admittedly.
It says dropped catch error.
Yeah, I don't remember it, but I'm sure. I'm 100% sure it happened.
Because that run ended up being unearned. That was one of the unearned runs that Sale gives up. No, but you're right. I mean, you have a guy who, and I was pulling up Yordan Alvarez's page when I accidentally muted you. In the 233 games this guy has played in the majors, he over 162 game average, 42 home runs, 129 RBIs, and a 290 batting average, 948 OPS. I mean, this guy just rakes. I mean, even off of a lefty, and I'm sure that the left-on-left matchup, they love, especially with Chris Sale, right? But when you have someone who – he had two hits off of him at that point. One, like you said, the mammoth home run. I will never be against – walking someone to load the bases with one out.
I'm sorry to cut you off, but
you're good.
The other scenario to acknowledge here is at least the fact that the open base wasn't first base, it was second base. With that being said, I don't even mind advancing that runner in this scenario just because of how dangerous Heath looked in this game.
He's a fantastic hitter, and the Red Sox pitch to him, you know, they get bit by it. I believe Houston went up, 3-0 at that point after Alvarez's hit?
Yes. And, and so after that, shortly after that, they decide to pull Chris Sale after one out in the sixth inning. And then at this point, Brandon, I think this is where you're seeing – Houston's luck kind of come back, because there's a difference between having a good plate approach, it's not always going to equate to success. You're going to hit it into bad spots. Brandon, when I firmly say, I don't think that a hit in the ninth inning of game four, or the sixth inning of game five that Houston had was not perfectly placed. Like, as much as, like, yes, it's on the pitching for not getting there. But like, in terms of that, those are the types of innings that spike a guy's BABIP. And so there's only so much you can do with that as a team defensively as a team.
And something that's really interesting that I love to look at and haven't, I don't even think I've ever brought up this stat on the show. If you go on to Baseball Savant and click on the individual game, it shows you what that team's expected batting average was for the whole game. LJ, without looking, would you like to guess first what the Red Sox was and then what the Astros was? I will let you know the Astros is higher, but it's pretty interesting.
I would say maybe 275 for the Red Sox, because I didn't feel like the play approach was that bad, with the exception of, it's expected batting average based on angle and everything.
Yeah, based on like when they hit the ball.
It's like 220 then, because everything was into the ground.
212 for Boston. They had three hits today.
And Houston, I'm going to go ahead and say like 375 for Houston.
256.
Really?
Yes.
So most of it must have come in that inning, because my eyes don't lie that badly, and I'm trying to say this my best possibly without bias, but there was just, it was all gap shots, down the line shots, that freaking bloop single into shallow center. Like there was every perfectly placed ball you could have happened in that inning as the Red Sox just imploded.
Kyle Tucker had the infield single to Xander Bogaerts right after they brought in Brazier, I think. And so you're right about the Astros' luck hitting. You're absolutely spot on with that. Red Sox hitting, though. I mean, LJ, you texted me. I'm going to read your exact quote. You said, "We've seen the duality of the Astros pitching in this series." And
sorry, did you have something else to add to that before?
You're absolutely right with that as well, where the Astros couldn't pitch in the first three games. And now in the last two, they've looked like what they were in May, where they went through the rotation five times in a row and had like a one something ERA. It's crazy how hot and cold this pitching staff has been.
It is. It's, again, I have to admit that I did mention this a million times this year. It was a reason I didn't necessarily feel all that comfortable with Houston. Frankly, once I got to the postseason, I didn't see any options I liked better. But I wasn't all that comfortable with Houston because their starting pitching is very talented, but very young. I believe Jose Urquidy is the only, am I correct in saying Jose Urquidy is the only pitcher other than Lance McCullers and Zach Greinke, of course, of the main young three in that rotation, he's the only one to have pitched in a postseason with fans?
Yes, 2019, Urquidy. I remember he was 100% on the roster in 2019. For the postseason. Framber.
I don't believe Framber was.
Framber only pitched in the 2020 postseason. And Luis Garcia 100% didn't. Yeah, so.
Oh, yeah, he's the only one of those three that has had a postseason with fans in the stands. He's the only guy who's had to play to that pressure. And that can certainly get to guys. The youth and inexperience often leads to streakiness, which we've seen all year. Frankly, these guys are capable of more than their ERAs, and their ERAs are pretty darn good. And so, yeah, it's not all that shocking to me to see them get shelled, and it's not that shocking to me to see them do what they've done here. I mean, Framber Valdez is an excellent pitcher. I was shocked to see the Red Sox not respond better, because, Brandon, I feel like the Red Sox responded very well in the face of adversity this year. I mean, honestly, no one expected this team to do anything. That's adversity enough in itself. And they've bounced back time and time again. But it felt like after they started those first like four or five innings where they couldn't get anything going, and every single ball was hit into the dirt, it just killed this team's energy.
LJ, I think that, yeah, this was Framber Valdez's either best start of the season, of his season, or second best start. The only one I can pinpoint that maybe could have been his best start was actually against the Red Sox June 2nd.
Soccer.
7 innings, 5 hits, 1 earned, 10 strikeouts. That was only his second start of the year then. Tonight,
I also question why he didn't stay out there. He was only at 93 pitches, and your odds are not going to see him again this series.
Well, game 7 could be Saturday, and today's Wednesday. So in an emergency, I get it, especially in that case, why push him? Let's see, Saturday, so Thursday.
Well,
that's only 2 days rest. I guess like in an absolute emergency, and there's no reason to keep him out there.
It's 2 days rest, but I think Stanek is more important to have getting extra rest here, because Framber Valdez, to my knowledge, has not made very many appearances out of the bullpen, and I don't think you're going to bring a guy on that short rest in as the starter. So, yeah, he's got
Framber did not come out of the bullpen once this year.
He has not come out of the bullpen once this year. He's come out quite a bit, but he hasn't really come out of the bullpen since 2019. And he had a 5.86 ERA in 2019. So I don't see him as that trustable of an option. Meanwhile, Stanek, it would have been nice to have him rested fully for the home stretch.
Well, Framber's line, nonetheless, 8 innings, 3 hits, 1 earned run, 5 strikeouts to 1 walk. The 1 earned run comes off of a Rafael Devers solo home run in the 7th inning. Rafi Devers now has 5 home runs this postseason, which leads all of Major League Baseball. He goes 2 for 3 in this game. And really looked like the only player who had a semblance of an approach at the plate today for Boston. Framber was just looked very good. The 13 groundouts, I mean, that is a crazy number. 13 groundouts to 2 flyouts. This dude was just, it was a strange approach for the Red Sox, for a team that hits the ball in the air as much as they do.
And it honestly broke the team. Like, I've never seen them look like this towards the end of a game before. Just the fact that they kept going into the ground, into the ground, into the ground. Brandon, here's another stat for you they mentioned on there. This is the longest that the Red Sox have been no-hit at Fenway in playoff history.
Wow. And that was through the 4th inning, right?
Yes, I believe it was 11 outs or 12 outs.
I think he got through the 4th inning, and the first batter in the 5th was a Devers who broke it up.
Yes, he got through the 4th, so the 4 times 3 is 12. So he got through 12 batters.
Also, do you happen to remember what was going on right before the bottom of the 5th inning, where the umps were like looking at some very strange like light thing that was beaming off of one of the center field walls?
No.
They like stopped the game, and they had the umps just like pointing and like looking at some like very strange like laser looking thing, I guess is what you would call it. Just I don't know what was going on.
Wall?
Yes. I don't know if like it, because I was just like, what is going on? And they just cut back to it quick. Also, LJ, why are these games not on
laser pointer?
Yeah, why are these games on Fox Sports 1 and not normal Fox? I mean, this is game 5 of a CS, and a lot of people with basic, I don't know if you get Fox Sports 1 with basic cable. I know you get Fox. Okay, well, I know you get Fox with a basic cable. Strange to me that these aren't nationally, they are, but not you know, very, very nationally televised. I don't know what the word is.
It is strange because it was the Dodgers game on Fox.
It's on TBS. All their games have been on TBS.
All right, then there's no reason. Honestly, I hadn't noticed that I was changing the channel to TBS and not Fox. But yeah, there's no sense in not having them on Fox other than the fact that Fox doesn't want to put them on.
Yeah, I don't know. I know the whole World Series is on Fox, and also I'm going to get to that later because it has to do with – actually, no, I'll say it now. They're doing Steal a Base, Steal a Taco once again, which, for those who don't know, if someone steals a base in the World Series, the day after the World Series ends, everyone gets a free Doritos Locos Taco from Taco Bell. So
if I liked Doritos, that would be a premium deal.
It's awesome. For someone who is a college student and lives very close to a Taco Bell, will 100% be claiming my free taco when someone steals a base in the World Series.
Is there even a Taco Bell near me?
Other than that, while LJ figures out if he's in close proximity to a Taco Bell.
There's one in West Roxbury, but I have no clue where the heck that is. Freaking Boston, man.
Standout performer, Yordan Alvarez, Yuli Gurriel looked good today, but Framber Valdez by far was the best player in this game, the most impactful player in this game. Chris Sale, though, I have to give props to him. He really battled today. I mean, this Houston lineup is not easy to navigate through. And through the first five innings, other than that home run to Alvarez, he was pretty much unscathed. I mean, three hits through five and a third and only two walks is very impressive. So Chris Sale, I mean, he stepped up in a big game. This is game five. You probably expect him. LJ, if I told you prior to the game, Chris Sale's going five and a third with two earned runs, you're probably extremely happy with that.
Very. I'm telling you so. Because that was the big Chris Sale game all series.
Well, shall we get on to Braves Dodgers?
Yes, but before we get too far.
Oh, preview the next game, yeah.
Oh. That wasn't what I was going to do, but go ahead.
Friday, game six in Houston, Nathan Eovaldi versus to be determined for Houston. Both teams get a much needed rest day for their bullpens. I think that that's a fair point.
Yes.
Now on to what you were going to say. I'm sorry.
Congratulations to the Los Angeles Dodgers for winning the National League Championship Series.
Oh yeah. For those who didn't know, I mean, now that they're down 3-1, it's an Atlanta sports team. Dodgers, they're coming back. So we might as well just not even talk about the next few games between them. I mean, I can tell you right now the Dodgers are coming back. But let's talk about how the Braves get up 3-1 as the starting pitching matchup tonight. The Braves go with an opener in Jesse Chavez. The Dodgers pitch Julio Urias. And, big news coming out of the Dodgers camp, which I will get to once we get through the game recap, as that's important for the rest of this postseason. But
now you got me curious.
Justin Turner done for the season after suffering a hamstring injury in this game. But Chavez works a clean first. The opener works. Braves then hand it over to Drew Smyly. But in the top of the second, Julio Urias, LJ's calling timeout.
Quote from the Chris Sale's postgame interview today. I left my nuts out on that mound tonight. That's for damn sure. Okay, continue.
I love it. That's something I would expect from Chris Sale. That's for sure. Top second, Braves jump all over the 20-game winner himself, Julio Urias. Eddie Rosario with a home run. Adam Duvall steps up next, and he rips a home run. They go back-to-back to take a 2-0 lead. And then in the third inning, it will continue. Freddie Freeman rips a solo home run and it's 3-0. Later on in the inning, Jock Peterson stays so hot this postseason. Another RBI for him. RBI single that scores Eddie Rosario after he tripled. And that would make it 4-0 Atlanta after 3 innings. And Drew Smyly worked a very nice game out of, I guess, out of the bullpen is what you would call it. But he was the follower. It's 4-0 in the fifth. Braves get another run on a sac fly. And then the Dodgers finally are able to get something on the board in the bottom of the fifth inning as A.J. Pollock rips a 2-run single to make it 5-2. But really from this point on, it was smooth sailing for this Braves bullpen as they hold the Dodgers scoreless in the sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth innings. Atlanta scores 4 in the top of the ninth off of Tony Gonsolin, but clearly the Dodgers were just trying to get outs at that point. They really didn't care who it was on the mound. And Braves win handily 9-2. The reason there's not much to talk about this game is after those home runs early, all of the energy went out of Dodger Stadium. Even when they scored the 2 runs in the bottom of the fifth, it was just like, you know, I still thought the Braves were in control for the entire game. So props to Atlanta, props to Eddie Rosario, who goes 4-for-5 in this game, is a double shy of the cycle, which, of course, remember, he did hit for the cycle during the season. And his last hit would have been a double in the ninth inning, except it went over the wall for a home run. Just barely scraped over the wall for a homer. So he gets 2 homers in this one, 4-for-5 effort, becomes the first player in championship series history to collect 2 4-hit games in the same series, which I found amazing that that has never happened. So props to Eddie Rosario. And yeah, other than that, not really much to say other than Julio Urias kind of got knocked around today.
He did. You know, it's amazing. Again, let's remind ourselves how talented this Dodgers team is, particularly the pitching staff. I mean, even very hurt. Let's remind ourselves that Danny Duffy, Clayton Kershaw, and Dustin May are not in operation as starters. Granted, Danny Duffy did not get to even start a game for the Dodgers, but regardless of that, he was in was he an all-star? He was definitely on all-star pace before he ran into injury issues.
We may have hyped him up to be the Cy Young after his first couple of starts, which, you know.
No, that was not a bad take at the time, I guarantee
you. No, it wasn't.
He finished the year with a 2.51 ERA during his 60 innings. He got hurt. That's not on him.
He didn't pitch a single game for the Dodgers, but was traded.
His 12 starts were fantastic.
Absolutely,
and
yes.
If he'd gotten healthy, that's a huge add to this team. And so all of a sudden, you've got a situation where you're without 3 big pitchers for you, starting pitchers, and no one feels like you're at a disadvantage.
Even Trevor Bauer, we have to mention him because he was having a good season prior to getting suspended. I mean, let's not forget about the dude who won the Cy Young, signed the biggest contract ever in terms of average annual value for a pitcher. So big names, you're right. And at the same time, like you were talking about last night, we still feel that there's not a single weakness on this team.
Yeah. And so at the same time, you have to ask, how are they underperforming so much? Like, what's going wrong?
I don't know. Is it the Dodgers underperforming or the Braves just killing the ball?
It's definitely both, but at the same time, you've got Walker Buehler, you've got You got Walker Buehler, who didn't have a good outing. You have Julio Urias that gets pounded. You've got Max Scherzer, who has made it out of he has made it into a situation where he could have the win. He's made it past the fifth inning, two or past the fifth inning, I think once this postseason. This has not been a good series, good playoffs, for this starting pitching staff, which is the best in baseball and should have performed much better than this.
And if we want to bring in up expected batting average here, sure, the Braves hit three home runs. They collect 12 hits or four home runs in this game. They collect 12 hits in total. But Braves expected batting average, 253. The Dodgers, who only collect four hits, 266. Dodgers were hitting the ball hard. It just wasn't falling. But at the same time, this man, Eddie Rosario, LJ, do you happen to remember who he was traded for at the trade deadline? Pablo Sandoval, straight up.
That's right.
A straight up trade for a guy who the Indians signed. Me and you loved that signing. I remember us talking a lot about, like, oh, this is great for the Indians. They're getting a guy who's gotten MVP votes the last few seasons, good hitter, can you know, give you some value in the field. The Indians were so cheap that they didn't want to pay this guy his – I'm actually scared to look at what the salary number is.
$8 million.
His $8 million salary. Why sign him? Why sign a free agent and trade him in the middle of the season for
– In their defense, he is performing roughly 40% better than for the Braves this year than he was for the Indians. If they weren't planning on bringing him back after this year and they could get somebody that if they were planning on bringing him back this year and they weren't seeing themselves as a contender, I don't entirely hate them trying to offload that contract.
But the problem is that the guy that they get in return, Pablo Sandoval, they immediately waive him. It's insane to me. Alex Anthopoulos, the Braves general manager, completely rebuilt this outfield and essentially gave up no prospect capital at the deadline. He is not getting nearly enough credit for this, for what he did at the trade deadline. I mean, Jock Peterson, Eddie Rosario, Adam Duvall, Jorge Soler, who was raking until he got COVID and was not put on this CS roster. It's crazy to me what Alex Anthopoulos has done, and he needs credit for it. And it's awesome. It's absolutely awesome.
Absolutely.
Well, Braves take a 3-1 lead. Game five is today, 8:00. It will be Max Fried versus TBD. I would have to assume this is gonna be Scherzer, right? No.
Scherzer pitched game
two. And that was in Atlanta. So he had the off day. So he'd be
it's gotta be him, yeah.
He'd be on 3 days rest. If it's not Max Scherzer, then it would have to be maybe a bullpen game for the Dodgers. Corey Knable maybe starting.
I would guess it's gotta be Scherzer because this is an elimination game. They'll give the ball to Scherzer. He'll get the win. They'll then have a full day to rest their bullpen, and then they'll do the bullpen game on game six because that's been their most effective pitching strategy this postseason. And then probably Walker Buehler again. Hopefully he can look better than he did last time for game seven. That's what I'd see.
Who knows what Dave Roberts will come up with.
Especially with how much he's using Tony Gonsolin out of the bullpen in shorter to like two inning relief stints.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like you can try to put him in as a follower type.
No, absolutely not. Yeah, interested to see what they go with. I'm very excited. Could we have the Atlanta Braves potentially in a World Series? The team that started off so slow this year. Actually, I'm interested to see like how late in the season you can like look at their record and be like, how did this team make a World Series? At one point this year, Atlanta was, let's see, where's it show here? They were 44 and 45 at one point. They were 50 and 53 at one point. Wow, that's crazy. Crazy. The Dodgers didn't even lose 53 games this year, did they? Oh, no, they had to. Oh, wait, no, they probably lost like 55.
57.
And the Braves were 50 and 53 at one point. Baseball. It's literally, this is why we love the playoffs. Love it. Love the playoffs.
That's why we don't need any more of it.
I agree. All right, we're going to continue doing our post-mortems where we look, we just talk about a couple of teams and we review their season. We'll continue with our theme of playoff teams that have been eliminated. LJ, let's start with the St. Louis Cardinals. Overview of their season. They finished second in the NL Central at 90-72. A lot of people picked them to win the NL Central after they splashed Nolan Arenado in free or in for as in a trade this offseason. And they lose on a walk-off in the wild card game to the Dodgers. Look, I know that the Brewers had a fantastic year and they weren't going to get caught. But I just still feel like this is a disappointing season for the Cardinals. And it clearly was to their front office, considering that they fired their manager a couple days ago.
Yes, it was a disappointment how you start. But I think the way they were able to end this year, probably there's two ways it could go depending on the person. You could look at this and say, hey, this is what we thought we had here. This is how they performed. It's proving our thoughts now. So let's keep moving forward with this. Or it's going to lead to more confusion, I think, because, okay, this team did not do nearly what we expected any of them to for the majority of the year, then pull this out of our ass. So which are we going to be seeing? Are we going to be seeing more of the end of the season or more of the beginning of the season? As for firing the manager, the farther I go past it, I'm moving away from my idea that it was player-based and more to a similar situation as to Aaron Boone and another reference I discovered a couple days ago in between our – or today, actually, in between our conversation on Aaron Boone. Aaron Boone – what it sounds like they're wanting to do is they're wanting to give him more control and less control from the front office, from the analytics, from a whole bunch of other people making decisions for him. A philosophical differences between the manager and the front office sounds like the front office wanted a lot more control out of for game plan decisions, team strategy than Mike Schilt was willing to give them. And once he saw that this is how the team wanted to lead, they decided to go in another direction. I think another interesting situation with this very well could be the Philadelphia Phillies. You see Gabe Kapler get fired as this team looked absolutely atrocious when he was there. He spends a couple of years in San Francisco and all of a sudden is going to probably win manager of the year. That's a big difference between those two. And I think you have to look at the fact that Philly, they go out and they get Joe Girardi, and they haven't been much better than they were with Kapler. I mean, marginal improvement. They're above 500, but this team is far too more talented than what they have been able to pull off so far. So it feels almost like their front office might be the ones holding the manager and the team back. And that might be what St. Louis wants to do. Not hold them back, but be in control.
That's a great point. I think that's exactly what they mean by philosophical differences. And it's interesting to me because, you know, usually you win 90 games and you're like, you know, that's a good season for most teams. That's a 55% win percentage. That's hard to do over a 162 game season. And if let's, you know, get into why this team we think may have underperformed a little bit. I think we can start right at the top. LJ, I mean, this team had the 15th best OPS in the league. You have Nolan Arenado, Paul Goldschmidt in your lineup, who both performed pretty good this year compared to how they normally do. They both hit 30 home runs. They both had very respectable on base percentages and slugging percentages. Past that, there was not a lot of production out of the outfield. Dylan Carlson looked pretty good. I mean, he's still 23 years old.
Good at times.
What's that?
He looked good at times.
Oh, yeah, right. Harrison Bader, he was okay in the plate appearances they got from him, but it just seemed like there was a lot of games that this Cardinals team had where they were just their offense was not good. 20th most runs in the league this year. It's runs at the end of the day is what wins you ball games. And when your offense is underperforming like that, it's a bit shocking to me almost that they were that low in the run scored category.
Who was the surprise of the year? I think we're going to agree on it. So go ahead and tell them.
Tyler O'Neill.
Oh, we are not going to be agreeing on this.
Tyler O'Neill this year, LJ, put up 6.3 WAR, a 912 OPS. This is a guy who this is first full season outside of 2020 where he won a gold glove. LJ, he went from a 70 OPS in 50 games in 2020 to a 150 OPS plus in 2021. He was 80% better of a hitter than he was last year. When you go from, you know, a combined, what is that? A combined 2.3 WAR in your first 171 games to 6.3 WAR in 138 games, that's a surprise to me.
It is a surprise to me. I don't know. I just feel like my biggest and best surprise here, I'm going with what I thought was the obvious pick of Adam Wainwright. Look, this is a guy who, while he had a good 60 games last year, had struggled for many years after that. And how many other players do you see at 40 years old where the narrative goes from, is he going to retire after this year, to he can definitely pitch at least two more years? That's the narrative change that we got with Adam Wainwright this year. We genuinely weren't sure they were going to bring him back, whether he was going to want to come back this last offseason. Most people, I think, were logical going into the season saying this is probably his last year in the majors. And then all of a sudden, he pulls out all the stops in this back half of the year. At age 40, he's throwing 200-plus innings and has earned himself an extension. Look, he is the reason that they were able to make up all this ground and make it into the playoffs. In my head, he was the biggest thing for this team in the back half of the year.
I do not I can't say that that is a wrong pick whatsoever.
I also should say I do not disagree with your pick, Tyler. But
there was two surprises then.
That wasn't where my head went. It was all.
I totally get that. Look, Adam Wainwright, you're right. The back half of the season puts up in the month of August a 1.43 ERA in six starts that he made. Just nasty stuff. And then you look at, oh, wow, three were against the Pirates. It doesn't even matter. It doesn't even matter. This guy is still amazing.
Yeah.
He's 40 years old. September, faces much better offenses and still puts up a very respectable 3.44 ERA. He's undefeated. He goes 4-0 with a 1.17 whip. Overall for the season, I believe he was only one of five pitchers to throw over 200 innings. I think it was Adam Wainwright, Sandy Alcantara. I'm going to pull it up right here, actually. The guys that throw over 200 innings this year were Zach Wheeler, Walker Buehler, Adam Wainwright, and Sandy Alcantara. That's it.
That makes sense.
Four National League pitchers. And that's surprising to me, especially when you see how managers are more inclined to pull their guys in the National League to do a double switch, to make them, to pinch hit for them. Do whatever. Just interesting little trend there. LJ, your biggest disappointment on the Cardinals?
Biggest disappointment on the Cardinals. Paul DeJong.
Paul DeJong is a good choice.
Was this guy not supposed to be the centerpiece of that middle infield for the next several years? Comes out and slashes 197, 284, and 390. I mean,
yeah,
it's got to be better than that. I mean, I think Alex Reyes made himself a case in the back half of the year with how bad he was after he broke that record, but it's clearly Paul DeJong because he took a position of strength for this team and made it a hole, a gigantic hole.
Yeah, I mean, that's an absolutely good choice. LJ, am I wrong to say Matt Carpenter, or has he just been on the downfall for so long? They don't even have his stats on the Fangraphs page. LJ, 130 games that he played in this year, 250 plate appearances, mostly used as a pinch hitter, 170 batting average, a 581 OPS, 65 OPS plus. I agree, though. It's either Paul DeJong or Matt Carpenter, but I feel like Matt Carpenter was already regressing so much the last few years that it has to be Paul DeJong, who...
I think my thing is, I don't want to necessarily blame a guy for having a bad season that doesn't have a true spot. He didn't really have a place on this team other than a pinch hitter. And while some guys thrive in that, are able to thrive in that type of mode, he isn't, especially when he was already, as you said, starting to fail a little bit. So, yeah, it's just he was never given the opportunity to push his way out of it. He didn't really deserve his opportunity to push out of it, but he also couldn't possibly make as big an impact as DeJong.
And Edmundo Sosa, who took Paul DeJong's job during the middle of the year, doubled his WAR in about how many plate appearances did DeJong have? All right, Paul DeJong had 402 plate appearances, 1.6 WAR. Edmundo Sosa, 326 plate appearances, 3.2 WAR. That's just getting your spot taken. Literally, that's all that is. Let's see how we're doing on time. What do you think? Should we just call it here, or should we do one more? All right. Well, thank you all for listening. Be sure to check us out tomorrow as we will be recapping game number 5 of Braves Dodgers. LJ, I know this is very impromptu. Do we want to do NL MVP tomorrow? I don't know what your...
No.
No, okay.
Very loaded day.
Got it.
However, I'm very tempted to say Friday or Saturday. Whatever day comes after tomorrow in terms of show. So Friday night recording, Saturday release.
All right. Well, I have a lot of time on my hands that day. Tentatively, that is what we're going with. And yeah, be on the lookout for it. Thank you all for listening once again, sticking with us the whole year, and we'll see you tomorrow.
See you mañana.